although she wanted to, which was strange and unsettling. As she contemplated how to handle a post-Drudge encounter with the man who had saved her life, she caught sight of Zeddy inching toward him. A second later, her brother pounced on her savior and hugged him around the waist, and Hart went rigid as a flagpole in Zeddy's embrace. "Oh my gods," Mercy said, setting her plate on a table as her appetite ran for the hills. She watched in horror as her father and Lil materialized out of the crowd to join her brother in humiliating her. Lillian pulled Zeddy off Hart so she could get in her own hug, while Pop grabbed the marshal's hand and pumped it like an auto duck jack. Hart looked horrified, as if a cluster of drudges had attacked him rather than the Birdsall family. Twyla cackled. "I'm sorry, but Hart Ralston's face right now is priceless. This is so embarrassing, it's almost physically painful." "Bless his heart. He stands out like a red velvet dinner jacket at a funeral. No wonder he never goes to parties. I'm shocked to see him here, honestly." Mercy couldn't bear to watch one more second of the mortifying scene playing out on the other side of the Founders' Day celebration, so she turned to Twyla. "What's he like? I mean, when he's on duty, does he get along with the other marshals?" "In a manner of speaking. He's not what you'd call friendly, but he's excellent at his job, the sort who's always got your back. People respect him." "I'm glad he had my back today," Mercy admitted. It was an unexpected relief to say it out loud, like fessing up to a mistake. Frank arrived and declared, "Beautiful weather we're having," as he handed Mercy a glass of lemonade, making her laugh despite her family's exuberant fawning over Hart. "Thanks, Frank. Cheers." "Oh, no," said Twyla, frowning over Mercy's shoulder. "Liz Brimsby is heading this way. Ask her to dance, Frank, before she corners Mercy again." Frank handed Twyla his drink. "I'm a wonderful human being," he informed her. "You truly are." He slapped a smile on his face and made the interception. "Lizzie, darling, cut a rug with me." Liz took his arm with a delighted giggle. Half of the over 40 population of Eternity was in love with Frank Ellis and his long silver-streaked black hair, but he had no clue. "And now Bob and Eugene are edging this way," said Twyla. "You poor thing, they're like sharks circling blood in the water. I'll take care of this. You go hide. Once people have had a few more drinks, I'm sure they'll leave you alone so you can enjoy the party in peace."
"Thanks, Twyla."
"You bet."
Twyla stepped between Mercy and two of Eternity's biggest gossips so that Mercy could make a run for it.
"Is that your apple pie on the buffet table, Eugene? I swear you make the flakiest crust."
Mercy abandoned her lemonade and feigned a course for the ladies' room, which allowed her to abscond unnoticed to the outer limits of the park behind City Hall, where the party lights didn't quite reach. She sat on a picnic table, rested her feet on the bench, and drank in the serenity of being quiet and alone for however long it lasted. It didn't last long, because 5 minutes later, Hart Ralston crossed the park and found her where she sat in the shadows. Bizarrely, he was the one person whose company she didn't mind at the moment, even though the air crackled around them with visceral awkwardness.
"Hi," he said, standing so high over her seated position that she practically had to lie down on the picnic table to see his dimly lit face. The man's height never failed to stun her. She thought she knew how tall he was, but then she'd see him in the flesh and think, "Mother of sorrows, he's tall."
"Hi," she answered, feeling more like a gawky 14-year-old than a full-grown woman. He tilted his head toward the party.
"I wanted to talk to you over there, but I couldn't get anywhere near you."
"Because half the town mobbed me?"
"And the other half mobbed me."
"The other half being my family. Sorry about that."
"No worries."
Mercy knew she ought to say something, but her mind wouldn't stop reliving the events of the morning. The drudge, Hart's face, the feel of his hands on her cheeks, the way his fingers had wrapped around hers until he was certain she had hold of the cup. She didn't know what to make of it. Of him.
"Anyway," he said, "I thought I ought to check on you before I head back to Tanria. Make sure you were all right."
"I am. Thank you."
He nodded. Are you here for the party, then?
She inwardly cringed at her feeble attempt to make small talk.
Sort of.
No offense, but you don't strike me as the partying type. It wouldn't be accurate to say that Hart smiled, but his lips quirked up, and the corners of his eyes turned to crow's feet, a hint that some form of happiness or humor resided within him.
There's a reason I'm over here and not over there, he said.
She tried to smile at him, but it came out more like a grimace. Hiding under a rock was beginning to sound like an excellent idea. Hart batted the spiky seed pod of a sweet gum tree with the side of his boot.
I was on my way to see you today when the dredge got loose.
To drop off a body?
No. I wanted to apologize for that night at the Little Wren Cafe. I was an ass to you, and I'm sorry. And I was an ass to you the last time I dropped off a body. And most of the times before that, too, so I apologize. For all of it.
This was the second unexpected apology she had received in the past 36 hours. But unlike Nathan's, Hart's regrets didn't seem to come with any strings attached. Once again, her perception of the universe turned on its axis. I haven't exactly been a ray of sunshine to you either, she admitted. Besides, I should be groveling at your feet in gratitude right now.
Hart toyed with the sweet gum ball at his feet. Just doing my job.
Well, it's a terrifying job.
You get used to it.
You get used to it. He stiffened. That wasn't an insult, Mercy amended. I'm trying to thank you. So, thank you.
You don't have to thank me. Trust me.
Too bad. I'm thanking you anyway. I can't believe you do that for a living. I definitely couldn't.
Most people couldn't do what you do either.
She could tell he meant it as a compliment, and it made her face flush.
There's something else.
His voice cut off, as if he had intended to add more words to the end of the sentence. Something else? She prompted,
when the proposed something else wasn't forthcoming. Would you like to dance? He blurted.
She gaped at him in disbelief, the heat of her cheeks expanding down her neck. You want to dance? She asked, because she was certain that she hadn't heard him correctly.
Yup.
With me?
If you want to.
Who are you, and what have you done with my heartache? He kicked the sweet gum ball and watched it bounce off the trunk of a tree.
I guess that's a no.
But Mercy was not about to lose the opportunity to dance with a man who was taller than she was, especially one who had made sure she didn't die that day. You guessed wrong. That was a yes. The crow's feet reappeared, and Mercy suspected that he was biting the inside of his cheek to stop himself from smiling, which was, if she was being perfectly honest with herself, endearing. He held out his hand, and she took it. Willing her palm to refrain from pumping sweat into the spot where she was joined to him as he pulled her to the outskirts of the dance floor. She couldn't remember the last time a man had held her hand. Nathan wasn't a fan of the practice. And she had forgotten how much she enjoyed the touch of masculine sinew and bone and skin. The band was playing a love song, the peppy sort, with the plunking rhythm of a banjo and the joyous tinkling of a piano in a major key and the drums pounding out the beating of a heart in love. Hart put his hand on Mercy's waist, firm and solid, warming her skin through the thin fabric of her blouse, and he guided her into an easy two-step, 1,000 times more graceful than she would have expected for a man of his height. He spun her out and turned her back into him, and now he was holding her closer. A shocked laugh burbled out of her.
You're a good dancer.
Surprised?
Very.
Maybe there are some things you don't know about me, Merciless.
He turned himself behind her back, sliding her from hand to hand in front of him.
Am I crazy? Or are we having fun right now? She marveled.
I'm not really the fun type.
The jury is still out on that. Would it be inappropriate of me to thank you for being taller than I am?
Something resembling a laugh escaped his mouth.
Not at all. Thank you for being tall enough for me to dance with you on my feet rather than on my knees.
Was that a joke? Do I spy a smile on your face?
He was definitely biting the inside of his cheek now.
Nope.
Your mouth turned upward for half a second. I saw it.
Probably indigestion.
Or evidence of mild joy. Someone hand me a paper bag. I'm hyperventilating from the shock of it.
You're not helping your Hart-Ralston is fun argument here.
Then prove me wrong.
His face broke into a grin so genuine and surprising that Mercy felt as if someone had shaken up a bottle of root beer and opened it inside her in a fizzy explosion. His eyes glinting with mischief, he backed his way toward the middle of the dance floor, shaking his hips from side to side as he pulled Mercy with him.
I can't believe what I'm seeing, she laughed.
And wow, those hips, she thought, as he spun her out into a basket whip step. Right into the arms of Nathan McDevitt.
Whoa there, tiger,
Nathan said, as he caught Mercy and gave Hart a smile full of strained bonhomie, reaching out to shake his hand.
Marshall Ralston, I didn't get a chance to thank you for saving my girl earlier today.
Your girl? Mercy said, indignant.
But neither of the men seemed to hear her. Hart's grin vanished. He had had no problem laying into Nathan over a judge on Main Street, but now that Mercy's ex-boyfriend had rudely interrupted their dance, his demeanor drained of self-assurance.
Oh, right. Sure thing. I'll take it from here, Marshall, Nathan told him.
And then he whisked Mercy off to the other side of the dance floor.
What do you think you're doing?
She protested.
A Marshall Mercy? They're not exactly known for healthy, long-term relationships.
She pulled herself free of his grasp.
What's it to you? I am not your girl. We are not dating.
Well, I don't think you're dating Ralston either, because I've never seen a man exit a dance floor that fast.
I'm here,
and he's gone. So what are you going to do? Make a fool of yourself and go running after your demigod hero?
The music blared, and couples laughed and danced around her. But from Mercy's perspective, the world stilled. She tallied up Hart's words and actions over the course of the past several hours, and none of them figured into the man she had summed up over 4 years ago. Today, he had come to her rescue, escorted her home after a drudge nearly killed her, made her a cup of doctored tea, and asked her to dance when he found her alone at a party, after tracking her down for the specific purpose of apologizing to her. It was the apology that rattled her the most, that made her wonder if she'd never had him figured out at all. She had called him arrogant the day they met, but an arrogant man apologized to obtain absolution. A good man admitted his errors and expected nothing in return. Now Mercy had a burning desire to find out whether or not Hart Ralston was a good man.
You know what? Running after my demigod hero is exactly what I'm going to do, she told Nathan, and throwing caution to the wind, she bolted from the dance floor.
But Mercy!
And I hope you don't get that stupid promotion!
She shouted over her shoulder as she left. Chapter 22. She ran toward Main Street, the clicking of her heels growing louder the farther she got from the noise of the party, until she skidded to a stop on the boardwalk and spotted Hart's shadowy, lanky silhouette. Uphill, of course.
Infuriating man,
she muttered, as she hoofed up the boardwalk, pathetically out of breath within seconds. He turned toward the sound of her clacking shoes, but by the time she reached him, she was breathing too hard to speak.
What's wrong? He said.
And Mercy caught a glimpse of the concern and alarm she'd seen when he'd taken her face in his hands after slaying the drudge that morning.
What's wrong?
She threw her hands into the air and panted.
You rescue me from a drudge, but you ditch me on the dance floor with that weasel?
I thought he was your boyfriend.
Ex-boyfriend.
Oh.
He considered this.
He does resemble a weasel.
He is a weasel.
Sorry.
Hart stuffed his fists into his pockets and wore a face as guilt-ridden as Leonard's that time he managed to get onto the kitchen counter and eat the last two fancy chocolates left in the box that Pop had given her for her 29th birthday.
What is happening here? One minute you hate my guts, and the next minute you're dancing with me like we're...
She waved her hand at him as if whatever she wanted to say was written all over the front of his shirt.
Why are you being nice to me all of a sudden?
Maybe the better question to ask is, why were we so mean to each other to begin with?
I don't know.
Her voice was so shrill that a dog barked in the distance. Hart frowned at the toes of his boots. And while Mercy didn't know what exactly she had intended to do once she had caught up to him, she was fairly certain this was not it. She tried a more peaceful tack.
Do you like cake?
Hart blinked at her. Cake?
Coconut cake.
Yes, he answered doubtfully.
Oh, good. I was afraid you were one of those horrible men who don't have a sweet tooth and never eat desserts.
I am horrible, but I like cake. Mercy clutched her skirt, as if the cotton could infuse her with bravery.
Would you like a slice of coconut cake?
Is this a hypothetical question?
No, there's a literal coconut cake waiting for me at home. Zeddy brought it over to cheer me up this afternoon, and I haven't had any yet.
You're inviting me over for cake?
Yes.
Now?
Yes.
Mercy's poor skirt was going to be as wrinkled as her great aunt Hester by the time she was through with it. Hart's shy reticence made inexplicably fluttery things happen behind Mercy's breastbone. All right, he said, and the flutter inside Mercy's chest burst into applause. They walked for half a block in silence. The will he kiss me at the door frisson of a first date wafted around them, when obviously this had never been and never would be a date. And the whole point was that he was coming inside for an innocuous slice of cake anyway.
Where did you learn to dance like that?
Mercy asked him. My mom. Mercy clamped her lips against the urge to laugh. What? Did you think the three mothers chucked me onto the earth, fully formed?
Kind of.
Another one of those gusty laughs burst out of Hart's mouth, inspiring the fluttering applause in her chest to turn into a standing ovation.
Are you close to your mom?
I was. The applause died.
Sorry.
It's all right. You didn't know. They arrived at Birdsall and Son, and Mercy rushed to unlock the door before the uncomfortable kiss at the front door weirdness got any weirder.
I need to let Leonard out. Prepare yourself.
Duly noted, he said, an increasingly intoxicating sense of humor lacing his words. He stepped across the threshold, an act that struck Mercy as intimate, the movement from outside in. Granted, it was the lobby of an undertaking business, but she felt swoony as she watched him hang his hat on the coat rack and run a hand through his hair to neaten it.
It's an innocent slice of cake, Mercy,
she reminded herself, as she clicked upstairs in her kitten heels and opened the door to her apartment. Leonard bolted out, his paws hammering the stair treads. Mercy balanced the cake stand, two plates, two forks, and two napkins in her arms, and made it downstairs in time to see Leonard running excited circles around her guest. Unbothered, Hart gave the dog the wide grin Mercy had been trying to coax out of him for the past 10 minutes, as he caught Leonard and squished the dog's jowly face. I'm not sure which of you is more besotted, she said. She let Leonard out the front door, and Hart stood next to her, his presence like an oven, the heat of his body radiating off him. Mercy resisted the urge to fan herself as Leonard finished his business, trotted inside, and settled onto one of the green velvet armchairs. She cut two slices of cake, setting one plate on the customer side of the counter for Hart, and moving behind it with her own slice to face him as they ate. He stood up straighter after his first bite. Zeddy made this?
Shocking, isn't it? He's got an internship at a fancy restaurant in Argentine. He's going to be a chef.
Hart squinted in confusion. What about Birdsall and Son?
Curtis Cunningham has offered to buy us out. I think Pop's going to take it.
But what about you? His concern on her behalf sent an electric zing of gratitude bouncing around her insides like a pinball.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for asking. Because do you know what? You're the only person who has asked that question. What about you, Mercy?
She shook her head and scraped a bit of stray frosting onto her fork.
Pop and Zeddy and Lil keep saying this is what's best for me and that it's time for me to move on with my life. But I don't want to. I admit that running the office isn't my ideal career, but I do love building boats. I love performing the funeral rites. I love being able to bring some sense of peace and closure to families in mourning. I love being an undertaker.
So why can't you do that?
Undertaking has always passed from father to son, not father to daughter. Besides, there's no one else who can run the office. So if Zeddy doesn't want to be an undertaker, and my sister and her husband aren't going to be running delivery anymore, that's that. It's over. And it's not like there's another undertaker out there who's going to hire a woman, especially one who hasn't gone to trade school.
Mercy set her fork on her plate in defeat. This was the first time she had managed to articulate what exactly it was that bothered her about selling the business, and it left her with a sadness that settled into her bones. She was thankful that Hart didn't try to cajole her out of it. He watched her, waiting for her to go on.
Pop deserves to retire, and Zeddy shouldn't have to give up his passion for a career he doesn't want. Lillian and Danny have their own lives to live. I would never in a million years expect any of them to give up their hopes and dreams for me. But my whole life, I've done what's best for everyone else, and I never minded it or begrudged my family anything. Now, for once, there's something I want, and it feels like there's no one in my corner.
Hart ate a ruminative bite of coconut cake.
I'm sorry. That's a shitty situation.
It is. Thank you.
I'm known for my eloquence. Mercy burst out laughing, and an honest-to-God's smile spread across the severe lines of Hart's face in response, making his pale eyes light up.
She had always thought of those eyes as cold and reptilian, but here, in the gaslight of the lobby, everything about him softened and warmed.
As she regarded his strange eyes, she itched to ask him a question that was none of her business. He cut off another bite of his shrinking dessert with the side of his fork.
You are dying to ask me which god is my dad, but you can't figure out how to phrase it without being rude.
Mercy was glad that her complexion didn't lend itself to blushing.
How did you know?
You have the, which god is it, face. I've seen it a million times.
Sorry.
Hart shrugged off her embarrassment.
It's all right. The answer is that I have no idea. He told my mom his name was Jeff.
Jeff?
Jeff.
One corner of Hart's mouth veered skyward in irony.
That seems so... not godlike.
He left my mom high and dry. That doesn't seem very godlike either.
His tone was light. But Mercy sensed that his life as a demigod, with people gawking at him and wanting to know if he had any special powers, most certainly wasn't.
I didn't ask that question aloud, and yet I managed to put my foot in my mouth, she said.
Sure did.
That one corner up smile was starting to make her lightheaded.
Well, I've already got one foot in, so I may as well stuff in the other.
She put her elbows on the counter and leaned in, and even in the dim light, she could see his cheeks go pink.
Mortal or immortal, he guessed.
Do you read minds?
I don't know. If I'm mortal or...
Really?
Only one way to find out.
Again, his tone made light of it, but his eyes were bottomless.
Mercy tried to wrap her brain around the idea of immortality. So you have no idea if you're going to live forever unless you...
That about covers it. They say everything comes to an end except the unknown god, if you believe in that sort of thing. But an eon is a long time, so...
He had a tiny smear of frosting stuck in one corner of his mouth, and it made him seem so human and vulnerable.
That must be lonely.
I guess.
I'm sorry. I put that badly. I mean...
Mercy reached across the counter to touch his wrist, the place where bare skin peeked out from under his sleeve, and she could have sworn that a spark flew out on contact, like flint hitting steel. She resisted the urge to tear her hand away as she spoke.
I face my own mortality every day. I can buy a fabulous blouse from a mail-order catalog, cook a terrible dinner, and go to bed with a good romance novel. But when I send the dead sailing across the salt sea, I know that the new blouse and that terrible dinner and a good romance novel won't mean a thing when I'm gone. And honestly, it's a comfort. It's something that links me to everyone around me, no matter who they are. Most people seal themselves off from death, but that doesn't change the fact that we're all joined together by this single thread. But you... He rolled his napkin between his fingers.
Go on.
That's it, isn't it? You could go on and on. And everyone you'll ever know or love will grow old and die. But you'll still be here. It'd be like reading a book that doesn't end. No matter how good the story is, you want it to be over at some point. For everyone else, death is a question of when, not if. But for you, it's the opposite. If, not when.
He finally met her gaze, his face unshuttered, and she saw that while most people were scared to die, Hart Ralston was afraid to live.
Thank you, he said.
For what?
For getting it.
They stared at each other across the counter, and Mercy thought he really might kiss her. Her breathing shortened at the thought, and her lips went plump with expectation.
Did she want Hart to kiss her, though?
The second she thought the question, the answer came roaring up from every nook and cranny of her being.
Yes. Please, dear gods. Yes.
His eyes fell to the place where her fingertips touched his wrist, and Mercy pulled her hand away, as if he might not notice that she'd ever touched him, when the heat of his skin still sang in her fingertips.
Do you make terrible dinners on purpose? He asked her.
Humor. Thank the trickster for humor.
Only when I cook.
He rewarded her with a one-corner grin and crow's feet.
Good thing Zeddy's going to be a chef, then.
Indeed.
Well, my compliments to him on the cake.
He stared at his empty plate, and Mercy understood that there was no longer any reason for him to stay.
I should probably get going. Early shift tomorrow.
On All God's Day?
Judges and poachers aren't too particular about days of the week.
Right.
He went to the coat rack to get his hat, and Mercy came out from behind the counter to walk him to the door.
There was something growing and changing between them, as fragile as glass. And Mercy worried that if he left now, it would break irreparably, but her mind emptied, unable to think of a single excuse to keep him there.
Thanks for inviting me in, Merciless. The nickname sounded fond rather than insulting.
Thanks for eating cake with me, Heartache.
He stood at the door, clutching the brim of his hat, looking very much as though he had something more to say, and yet his mouth remained silent.
Wait. You have some frosting there, Mercy told him,
indicating the spot on her own mouth. He wiped the wrong corner with the pad of his thumb, and the combination of his embarrassment and the touching of his thumb to his lips was the sexiest thing Mercy had ever seen in her life.
No, other side, she murmured, mesmerized by his mouth.
This is all part of my debonair charm, he told her once he was free of frosting.
Yes, exactly what I was thinking.
She realized that he was eyeing her lips, too, and she felt as if she were standing on the burner of a stove with the flames licking up all around her.
Well, thanks again.
He hovered at the door with his hand on the knob.
Hart?
It was the first time she had called him by name to his face without adding ache onto the end of it. They were standing so close to one another that she could see his chest move as he breathed.
Yep.
I think I'm about to do something stupid.
Okay.
Mercy stood on tiptoes and kissed the corner of his mouth on the exact spot where the frosting had been. She pulled away and watched him as he gawked at her and said nothing.
and his silence screamed around her until she couldn't take it anymore.
Well, say something.
I'm still waiting for you to do something stupid. Mercy's heart shot off like a champagne cork as Hart leaned into her, still clutching his hat. May I
Yes, please.
He lingered an inch from her face, as if he needed to work up the courage, before he pressed a soft, sweet kiss to her lips. It was over too soon. But then she heard his hat hit the floor as he reached for her with both hands, his fingers uncurling against her cheeks, and he kissed her again, his lips sliding against hers, sensuous and savoring. She pulled off her glasses and let them dangle from her fingertips in time for him to open the kiss wider, his tongue velvety and tasting of sugar and coconut. She wrapped her arms around his neck and pressed him between her body and the door, and her toes curled when he uttered a helpless, guttural sound that reverberated through his chest and vibrated into hers. He pulled her in closer, his body heavenly everywhere they touched. Mercy had never in her life experienced a kiss so good that she couldn't stand on her own two feet. But now, Hart Ralston was kissing her boneless, and she hung from his arms like a rag doll. He sucked her bottom lip into his mouth and bit down, not hard enough to draw blood, but with enough force to send an urgent message straight to the growing tension between her legs. Their lips parted, and Mercy sucked in air as she stared into Hart's huge, unfocused pupils.
Sorry, he gasped. That was... I shouldn't have.
But Mercy didn't want his apologies. She wanted him to feel as unmoored and heady and ebullient as she did. She kissed him again, this time with a depth and tenderness that placed a chunk of her own vulnerability on the line like a dare. The decadent movement of his lips against hers, the gentle stroking of his hands on her back, the sharp uptick of his arousal against her thigh clearly signaled that she had made her point. She broke off the kiss to whisper,
"Come upstairs."
Chapter 23. Upstairs. Upstairs meant Mercy's apartment, Mercy's bed, Mercy's naked body held against his own. Her breasts, her hips, the smooth skin of her thighs, and the sweet promise nestled between them. It meant his body, his heart, his painful fragility offered up and laid bare before her. She waited for his answer. Without her glasses on, her face seemed exposed and defenseless. He needed to tell her about the letters. But how could he fess up now, when she wanted him, not his letters, him, exactly as he was? Her hair was mussed with dark tendrils falling down around her neck. He curled a lock around his finger and reveled in the sensation of the thick, coarse texture against his skin. "Are you absolutely sure about this?" he asked her, his voice hushed, as if he might shatter the moment if he spoke too loudly, pushed too far, asked for too much. She spoke her answer against his lips. "Yes, very." He pressed his forehead to hers, and because it would be absurd to tell her that he loved her, he poured everything he felt into one word: Mercy. And then they were kissing again, her body pressing his to the door, and his ecstatic erection answering back. His lips skimmed an indulgent path down her neck, following her fingers as she undid the tiny buttons of her blouse, one by one, revealing a plain blue satin brassiere, an undergarment that was more practical than alluring. But as far as Hart was concerned, it was a million times sexier than all the lace in the world. He kissed his way along the line where cups met skin, blazing a trail of heat and want across the top of her breasts. She took his face in her hands and brought his lips back to hers, smiling against his mouth. "Upstairs," she said. And this time, it was not a question. She twined her fingers with his and tugged him up the steps as her glasses dangled from her other hand. They were 5 steps from the apartment door when Hart couldn't stand it and reached for her, his hands sliding down her backside, pulling her into him as he kissed her again and again, his knuckles brushing the railing behind her in the narrow stairwell. "We're almost to the top," she laughed. "It's too far," he spoke the words against the warm, salty skin of her neck. "You'll make it." He wasn't so sure, but she managed to drag him into the apartment. Leonard padded into the parlor after them, settling himself on a piece of furniture Hart couldn't be bothered to notice, not with Mercy before him, kicking off her shoes, lit by the light of a single lamp, her blouse open, her big eyes dark, her full bottom lip clenched nervously between her teeth. Now that he was standing in her apartment, her home, he was shy and nervous too. He nodded toward the glasses in her hand. "Can you see without those? Only things that are up close." He leaned in, inches from her face. "How close?" "Closer." She was so tall that he barely had to bend his head for his lips to hover an inch above hers. It was excruciatingly satisfying. "Now?"
"Not quite."
She stood on tiptoe, and her lips brushed his, feather light.
"There."
Hart was a match, and that kiss sent him flying across the striker to set him alight. He had enough wherewithal to take the glasses from her hand and set them carefully on the nearest surface. Again, he had only the barest understanding of his physical surroundings, with Mercy's bare cleavage outshining everything else in the room like a beacon of hope in a dark world. Before he let himself loose and kissed her as if air were not necessary to her survival. His hands roamed from want to want, the roundness of her hips, the curve of her ass, the valley of her waist, the why is there still clothing here temptation of her not yet naked breasts. As he removed the blouse and unclasped the brassiere, she tried to relieve him of his shirt, but he was too occupied by the perfection of her naked chest to be of assistance to her.
"Would you take this off?"
she demanded, exasperated, tugging on his sleeve. "Little busy at the moment," he murmured into her skin as he slid his lips down to her left breast. He drew the rosy brown tip into his mouth, his mind going blank with pure want. She gasped and buried her fingers in his hair and clutched him to her, and honest to gods, he had never been so turned on in his life.
"Take off your clothes before I strangle you,"
Mercy said with a huskiness that made Hart's erection stand up and cheer. He massaged the fullness of one breast with his hand, feeling her nipple pebble against his thumb, as he swept his tongue over the soft, heavy underside of the other. She whimpered, and Hart grew drunk on the sound of her pleasure. "Fucking magnificent," he whispered before he kissed his way down the velvet skin of her stomach until he knelt before her, unzipping her skirt and sending it cascading to the floor. He unclipped her stockings from the garter belt and slowly unrolled each one down her long, shapely legs, luxuriating in the sound of her ragged breathing. He helped her shimmy out of the garter belt, leaving Mercy in nothing but her panties.
"They're not very sexy,"
she said, as if she needed to apologize. The words "not" and "sexy" in combination made no sense in Hart's sex-fogged brain. He gazed into the expanse of pale pink satin stretched across Mercy's abdomen, and the narrow band of delicate lace at her waist that met in the middle with a tiny bow, as if Mercy was a gift he got to unwrap. He looked up at her in confusion. "What's not sexy?"
"The boring underpants. If I'd had an inkling this was going to happen tonight, I would have worn something skimpier."
"You could wear a paper bag. As long as you're taking it off, that's all I care about." And to prove that he meant every word, he peeled off the last of her lingerie, helping her step out of it as his eyes drank in her nakedness. He kissed her navel, the tip of his tongue dipping into the depression. Then he dragged his lips and tongue downward slowly, enjoying the anticipation before he reached his destination. Mercy gasped.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
Again, he looked up at her in wonder. There is literally nothing that I would rather be doing. May I?
Okay,
she said with a grin that managed to be both shy and lascivious. He obliged, tasting her and soaking in the moans of her approval, like good soil drinking in the rain. She tugged on his hair, and he obeyed, skimming his teeth up her body until his mouth met hers. She pulled away long enough to suggest,
maybe in the bedroom?
With a nod toward a darkened doorway as she stroked him over the thick fabric of his dungarees. Desire shot through him, so strong his vision went white. Do you want to get in there on your own two feet? Or do you want me to sling you over my shoulder and carry you in? Mercy's pretty eyes lit up, and she bolted for the bedroom. He chased after her, laughing as he caught up to her by the side of the bed, and he drew her into his arms. He kept his mouth on hers as much as he could, while removing his clothes at the same time. She stepped into him, her nakedness pressed against the length of his, her body fitting into his body. He cast aside the nagging belief that this would not, could not last. All he wanted to think about was the perfection of this one moment in time. She took him by the hands and drew him down with her onto the mattress and kissed him hard. And he kissed her in return, their bodies tangled together, moving in rhythm. Tell me what you like, he whispered.
Everything, everything you're doing, she answered breathlessly.
They touched and stroked and kissed and nipped. He maneuvered himself behind her and curled his body around hers and slid his hand between her legs, making her inhale sharply and buck against him. Show me what to do, he said into the soft skin behind her ear, and she moved her hand over his, guiding him into the rhythm she liked, the pressure, the places that felt best. Her breathing grew ragged as their fingers worked together. Mercy ground her backside deeper and deeper into heart's pulsing need, and he nearly spilled over when he felt her release, her body convulsing in waves against him. She rolled over to face him, and she reached between them to take him in hand. A cry of feral bliss tore free of his throat.
Serves you right, she told him,
her hand working miracles.
Any more of this, and I'm going to beg for mercy,
Hart rasped.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
She kissed him, scraping her tongue against his teeth.
I have a condom in my wallet. Too far away.
She reached past him to fumble through the drawer of her bedside table, and Hart used the opening to lavish her breasts with the attention they deserved. She groaned as she tore into the foil packet.
Can I put it on? She asked.
Gods, no. If you touch me again, I'll shoot off like a fireworks display. He snatched the condom from her hand and unrolled it carefully down his hair trigger shaft. Without warning, an explosion cut through the air. Hart and Mercy both startled as the first fireworks of the Founders' Day party sent red sparks flying through the night sky beyond the bedroom window. When their eyes met, they burst out laughing.
Make me see fireworks, Marshal Ralston,
Mercy challenged him, nudging his leg with her foot as their laughter died down, and Hart felt suddenly uncertain.
How should we?
In answer, Mercy lay down on her back, her loosened hair spreading dark shadows across the pale pillowcase as she spread her legs for him, a gesture so trusting and intimate that Hart felt the urge to cry.
Are you sure? He asked, his voice gruff. I don't want to crush you. I'm a big girl, Heartache. I'm hard to break.
He wondered if she knew how true a statement that was. Hart was the fragile one, while she was strong in all the ways that mattered. He took the chain from around his neck. He didn't want to batter Mercy in the face with his keys, and set it on the table next to the bed. He positioned himself on top of her, kissed her softly, and nuzzled the line of her jaw before he slid into her, pausing once he was inside to sear the sensation into his memory. Then he moved, and she moved with him, a dance of two bodies. The fireworks crashed overhead unheeded, until Hart let go at last and lost himself inside her.
Chapter 24. Mercy pulled a men's undershirt and a clean pair of underwear from her dresser before she rushed into the bathroom. It was one thing to have spontaneous sex with a man she barely knew. It was quite another for him to get an eyeful of her naked body after the lust goggles had been removed. She cleaned herself up, put on the shirt and panties, and stared at her reflection as she brushed her teeth. Her lips were kiss-swollen, her hair a mess. She took it down and brushed it out, continuing to marvel at the face in the mirror of a woman who just had mind-blowing sex with Hart Ralston. "I know I asked you to open a window, but wow," she prayed to the warden. Upon further consideration, she added, "Thank you, I think." The memory of Hart's tongue slathering attention on her burned through her body. "Thank you," she told the warden, more definitively. She heard Hart moving about in the next room. Based on her experience with other men, including with Nathan, she expected to find him dressed and ready to go by the time she got out of the bathroom. So she was surprised to see him sitting on the edge of the bed, wearing nothing but his boxers, his undershirt, and the keys he had taken off before he fucked you until you were howling his name, her memory supplied for her. She turned down the bathroom light but stayed inside the frame, leaning against the jamb. "Are you staying?" she asked, getting right to the point. "Do you want me to stay?" "Most people don't feel comfortable here."
"Why?"
"There's a well full of dead bodies in the basement."
"Do the dead bodies usually come knocking on the door in the middle of the night?"
She laughed nervously. "Not usually."
"My old mentor used to tell me that there's more to fear from the living than from the dead." "So."
He swallowed so hard that she could hear it from halfway across the room, and she realized that he was feeling as raw and timid as she was.
"I'd like to stay, if you want me to."
"I do."
"Then I'll stay."
He scooted back to give her room. She got into bed beside him but shrank away when he reached for her. "It's okay. You don't have to."
He shrank away too, as if he were a schoolboy about to get his hand smacked by the teacher's ruler. "I don't have to what?"
"Cuddle." He propped himself up on his elbow and studied her.
"What kind of assholes have you been dating?"
"Very big assholes. You met one tonight."
"They're weasels, the lot of them. What would you like to do?"
"I'd like to cuddle. A little," she admitted.
"Then come here."
He drew her into his arms, but she couldn't seem to relax. "Everyone knows that cuddling gets hot and uncomfortable after 2 minutes," she informed him.
"Then if either of us gets hot or uncomfortable, we'll desist. And no hard feelings. Deal?"
He spoke the words into her hair and stroked her arm, finally convincing her that maybe, possibly, there were men in the world who liked to cuddle. She nestled into the soft cotton stretched over his shoulder and surreptitiously enjoyed the lingering aroma of his bath soap. "Deal." She tried to breathe without making noise and to exhale on him in a way that wouldn't be weird or gross. After a minute of near asphyxiation, Hart spoke up, his voice rumbling in his chest, vibrating against Mercy's cheek.
"I think I should tell you that this bed is the greatest thing that has ever happened to me."
She grinned, although he couldn't see her face. "This is a sad confession.
I mostly camp out in Tanria, or sleep in barracks, or, when I have to take a body into town, in a hotel. Camping out is actually the best of those options. The world is not built for giants."
Talking seemed easier than cuddling, so Mercy pushed herself up and looked down at him, liking the way his face softened in the glow from the gas streetlight that filtered in through her lace curtains.
Can I ask you something? He tucked a strand of hair behind her ear.
Is that really a question?
How old are you?
Turned 36 last month.
Mercy nodded, mulling over the math in her head.
Older or younger than you thought?
About on the nose. But you've been with the Tanry and Marshalls for ages, haven't you? You must have been a baby when you joined up.
I was 16. My aunt took me in after my mom died, but she had her own family and her own life, and I was a mouthy teenaged boy who'd lost his mother. The Tanry and Marshalls seemed like a good idea to all of us at the time, and frankly, it was. My mentor was a man named Bill Clark. He was good for me, got me in line. He was the father I never had, you know?
The bittersweet tone of his answer made Mercy ask, gently, I take it Bill is no longer with us?
Correct.
I'm sorry.
Comes with the territory.
That doesn't make it easier.
No, it doesn't.
So Hart's divine father had never been a part of his life, and he'd lost the only father figure he'd ever had. Mercy wondered what on earth she would have done if her father hadn't been there for her, for all of them, when her mother died, even when he was hurting so badly himself. She had been frustrated with Pop lately, but Hart's story reminded her how much she had to be grateful for, and since he had offered up a chunk of his past, she decided to give him a piece of her own story.
My mom died when I was 17. She had cancer, but she wasn't sick very long. Which was a blessing, I guess. Pop was devastated. We all were. Still are. But, you know, you learn how to live with it.
I know, Hart said.
And it was nice to talk to someone who truly understood what it meant to lose your mother at so young an age.
So you were 17, but you had to run the office and help raise your sister and brother, too?
I didn't have to. I got to. She toyed with the chain around his neck. Why do you have two keys? He didn't answer. He simply watched her as she fingered the keys, an act that was beginning to feel more intimate than sex. Then she read the engraving on the ID tag, and her eyes narrowed.
Cunningham's? Seriously?
In my defense, I bought their cheapest package.
Their cheapest package is still price gouging. I'm ashamed of you.
She dropped the key like a hot brick, but fingered the second with greater care. This one looks like a birth key.
My mom's.
Shouldn't it be on your altar?
Don't have one.
How do you not have an altar? He squirmed in reply. Hart, where do you live?
I don't have an address per se, but it's more from choice than out of necessity.
He tried to make light of it, but Mercy wasn't buying it. You don't have a home?
I work a lot. There's no point.
Hart?
Mercy?
He imitated her shocked tone, bringing an exasperated smile to her face. She shook her head and snuggled into him. It felt more natural now. So where's your birth key? Who has it?
Alma McGuire.
Your boss?
We used to be partners. And she's more family to me than my aunt.
Mercy could hear years' worth of loneliness attached to that one sentence. They settled into a comfortable silence after that. Mercy traced drowsy circles on Hart's chest with her fingertips, and Hart did the same on her back. She hovered over the precipice of sleep when he whispered, Mercy, there's something. She lifted her head, waiting for him to say more, and when he didn't, she kissed him instead, light and soft and tender. He gave in, rolling onto his side, drawing her close, kissing her as if it mattered that she was Mercy, and no one but Mercy would do.
I'm sorry, but all this cuddling has made me hot, Mercy told him as she hitched her leg over his hip.
You were hot to begin with.
He bit her earlobe and leaned back to give her a flirtatious smirk, which quickly dissolved into a moan when Mercy reached for him past the waistband of his boxer shorts.
He gazed at her through the sex-dazed slits of his gray eyes, and she smiled wickedly at him.
No hard feelings? She said.
Oh, there are hard feelings. So many. This time, there was no awkwardness afterward, and Hart must not have been hot or uncomfortable, because Mercy drifted off to sleep in his arms. The gray light of dawn leaked in through the lace curtains as Mercy surfaced from sleep to waking, slowly sensing herself in Hart's arms. She felt pleasantly weightless, as if she were suspended in air, hanging in this pocket of perfect time. And then Hart said, "Fuck!" and sat up so suddenly that he nearly toppled her out of bed. She blinked at him blearily, knowing that her hair was a frizzy mess and her face sleep-rumpled.
"Everything okay?"
"Sorry. I think I'm extremely late for work. I'm supposed to be there by 7:30. Mercy fumbled for her glasses, and then she remembered that Hart had set them down she knew not where last night before he had undressed her. She squinted at her bedside clock.
"It's 6:47, she told him, as she mentally calculated where he was supposed to be, and how little time he had to breach the distance between the two.
"Fuck!" He laughed with a self-deprecation that Mercy could eat with a spoon. She had worried this would all seem like a truly horrible mistake in the morning light. But as she watched the human-shaped blur that was Hart get on hands and knees to search for a rogue sock under the bed, she couldn't shake the sensation that they might be dating?
"Sorry to make you late," she told him, as he shrugged into his wrinkled shirt.
"You." He came to the side of the bed and bent down to kiss her as he fumbled with his buttons. "Have nothing to be sorry for. Can I take you out to dinner when I finish this tour?"
"Definitely dating."
"Yes, please," she said, resisting the urge to jump on her bed like a 3-year-old.
"When will that be exactly?"
"The warden's day after next."
2 weeks?
He paused with one leg in his pants. "I can't tell you how much I wish it were sooner."
"It's not your fault. You've got to put food on your non-existent table."
"I'll have you know that the Tanrian Marshals supply tables in the barracks. We're not barbarians."
"Would you be willing to write to me in the meantime?"
He was smiling as he opened his mouth to answer, but a strange expression came over his face, and he suddenly seemed to find that the buckling of his belt required his full attention. "There aren't any Nimkilim boxes inside Tanria. Something to do with the old gods."
"Oh."
She'd have to go 2 weeks without a word from Hart, when she had hardly started dating him to begin with. The urge to jump on the bed disappeared. Mostly dressed now, he bent to kiss her again and again. The third kiss indicated that he was not inclined to leave, but he pulled back anyway. "Warden's day after next," he promised her. She got to her knees on the mattress, put her hands behind his neck, and pulled his mouth down to hers, and for a while longer, she made him forget about Tanria and his job and the time and anything else that wasn't her.
Chapter 25. Hart was late for work. Very, very late. He could not possibly care less.
Chapter 26. As Mercy walked up the front steps of Pop's house, she felt like she was girding herself for battle. While her family had cosseted her yesterday, there was only so long a drudge attack on Main Street could put off the inevitable. She was certain that Lillian would get down to brass tacks about Cunningham's offer at dinner tonight, and Mercy wasn't sure she'd be able to come out and say what she needed to say without bursting into tears. The words had come pouring out of her when she talked to Hart last night. Why couldn't she do the same with her family? Hart. Last night. She felt herself flush from head to toe. It would be nice if he were here beside her instead of risking life and limb to fight drudges in Tanria. She had never given much thought to what Marshals actually did, but now that she was dating one, wasn't she? It gave her heart palpitations thinking about it. She imagined him standing quietly at her side, sliding his fingers between hers. That seemed like a very hard thing to do. She had been dating him. Probably dating him? Definitely dating him. For less than 24 hours,
but there were already things that seemed very hard to her. The way he fiddled with the brim of his hat when he was nervous. The way he tried so hard not to smile or laugh, as if he were afraid of joy. Or the thoughtful way he made his side of the bed before leaving this morning. Right after he demonstrated yet again what his tongue could do between her legs. She would have to pour a pitcher of ice water over her head to get through dinner, or else Lil was going to see right through her. Mercy took a deep breath and went in. The usual explosion of talking and laughter hit her like a wave as she touched salt water to her mother's key. "Wish me luck," Lillian accosted her seconds later.
"How are you? You left without a word last night. We've been worried."
"I'm fine. I was exhausted after everything yesterday, so I went home early."
"And had sex with Hart Ralston?"
Mercy's mind screamed so loudly that she was worried her sister could hear it. She brushed past Lillian, saying,
"Hey, Danny, how about some wine?"
Danny handed her a glass of Shiraz with condensation frosting the sides. Mercy took a gulp beneath her sister's shrewd gaze and choked when the wine went down the wrong pipe. She attempted to pay attention to Pop's tirade on Equimeris bloodlines and sea polo, while Zeddy put the finishing touches on dinner and made the occasional crack about the Paxico Penguins, Bouchong's rivals, to get a rise out of his father. Mercy sat beside Lillian,